Welcome to the C3 Church Global Podcast with Phil Pringle. Phil is the founder and senior leader of C3 Church Global, a family of over 500 churches around the world. We're passionate about bringing you fresh, inspiring devotionals to fuel your day and insightful conversations on all things church and leadership. And it all starts right now.
Hey everyone, well, what a delight to have Darren Chapman with us today. He's a pastor on the Newcastle on the east coast of Australia. He is the executive pastor at C3 Victory in Newcastle. Husband of Beck, father of four, a wedding celebrant, with good reason actually, because today we're talking about the happy marriage, and that's the title of a book written by Darren, and it has literally blown up. Welcome, Darren. Good to have you with us.
Hey, Pastor Phil. How you doing?
I'm good. And I salute and congratulate anyone who has the courage to stand up in today's world of so many fractured marriages and troubles and to try and help people keep it together. So as we start out on this, what motivated you to write a book on the happy marriage?
Look, really, it came down to the amount of conversations that my wife and I were having with other couples about, you know, fairly normal life situations, but we found ourselves, you know, talking about the same stuff over and over again. And we kind of found ourselves being drawn by God into this space of really helping and sowing into marriages, and found a real passion for it. And yeah, that's kind of where the book kind of started. It was, you know, very much a case of talking to some smart people about some things that I had in mind, and they were like, that sounds good, you've got to write it down. And so, yeah, I just started the journey on the book and launched it in January this year. It's pretty good.
Yeah, and then you've been on TikTok and Instagram yep. giving little five-second marriage tips. How's that gone?
Yeah, it's it took off unexpectedly. After you spoke over me on a pastor's day, actually, my TikTok that afternoon jumped about 30,000-40,000 followers, and it was crazy. Yeah, it's good. I've got about, you know, 84,000 followers, which doesn't mean that much on TikTok, but it's something. Yeah, just 1 to 2 minute little marriage tips and advice and challenges to people to, you know, love their spouse, keep connecting, and love well.
That's really awesome. And I think anybody tackling this subject is really going to help people. And obviously there's a hunger out there. There are people feeling like, please help me know how to do my marriage. Because a lot of the kids getting married today came from homes where it hadn't been modeled that well to them, maybe. Right. And so they're having to learn how to do this. And you and I come from different generations, and I'm not sure what your world view is on some of the things, but mine is pretty old school, you know, like I think the Bible's got the right setup for
Absolutely.
Marriage.
Right.
And so it's not popular, though, when I tell people, look, I think the man's the head of the house. It's like I threw a grenade and, no, we're all equal, you know. And I think, well, you know, I don't care what I believe, God's going to hold me responsible for how I led the house as a priest, of the home, as somebody who prays and has the responsibility for the welfare of the house, you know, has the job to bring in the money. Right. A wife is working as well, which most often is in today's world, 90% of the time. I think that's awesome, but I'm not always sure it should be depending on that situation. I know it's hard in a financially strapped world, but when that responsibility is so heavily on a wife as well, I think the roles and the boundaries have to be defined really clearly so that the marriage has, you know, rails to guide on. What do you think?
Yeah, I love what John Fincheldi said a few years ago in one of his little books about the husband as the head of the home. The word for head there actually means source, as in source of a river. And that that was really powerful for my kind of understanding of what my role is as the husband in the home. Is I'm actually meant to be like this source of life and encouragement and peace and strength and leadership to the home. You know, it's not my way or the highway. It's actually, I'm here to bring the life of Christ into my home and release the Holy Spirit and love relentlessly. Mm. So, yeah, that was really helpful for me.
Mm. What do you think about falling in love? You know, like people say they fell in love and then they got married and then they sort of didn't get along with each other, so they broke up. You know, the whole falling in love idea is, to me, a little... It's a little flimsy.
Yeah. I think people fall into infatuation pretty quickly. But love's a bit deeper than that, right? Like love is sacrifice. Love is generosity. Mm-hmm. Love is laying down my life for this person, not always getting exactly what I want, but choosing to love this other person. You know, I love what Tim Keller says in The Meaning of Marriage. He says, you know, it's about mutual sacrifice that leads to mutual fulfillment. So it's, you know, that's the gospel at work inside a marriage. It's Ephesians 5. It's people fall into love, sure, but it's mainly lust and infatuation for a while. And then love deepens and love grows.
Yeah. I know when I met Chris, we resonated with each other. We could talk, we could get along. But I wouldn't say it was like getting head over heels. We missed each other when we went around and we had a deep companionship. But I know this, that in the 52 years of marriage that we've had, there's a reasonable amount of that time you're making a decision to love.
Right, right.
It just doesn't happen to you.
That's right. Absolutely. Choosing to love when you don't want to or you don't feel like it, or when I think it's hardest when you don't feel loved to keep making that choice to love. You know, like if you feel like your love tank is a bit dry, but you got to keep loving, that's the hardest choice, I reckon. Absolutely. Or if you're offended.
Yeah, you mentioned the love tank. is that from the Willard book or the... there are a couple of books that talk about putting deposits into each other of love, and then you have something to make a withdrawal on. But if you haven't put anything into the other person, I know some guys that I don't think they've ever bought their wives flowers. I don't know when they last took them shopping to buy them a dress and I'm almost hesitant to ask them because I know the answer is going to be no. Right. But they're expecting their wife to come up with what they want. And I think, guys, you got to invest in this without a hope of return, and you'll see something come back. What do you think?
Yeah, that's true. I got the concept from Gary Chapman's Five Love Languages. That's kind of where I first read it. But you've got to sow in equity if you want to make a withdrawal. You know, like you got to build up the love tank, the balance, so that there's something that you like. If you get sick and you're still requiring love, or if you say something that's offensive, then you know each time you're making a withdrawal, or if you make an expectation that's not founded on on anything that your spouse normally would supply, then you might be making a withdrawal there, and you've got to make sure that you're building that tank up all the time. I mean, love languages are powerful. It's a great principle. It's just more efficient too.
Yeah, I think in today's world, it's very different, and I just. Like I said before, the worldview today, even of Christians, is very different to what I remember our worldview was as kids. And so I think I'm learning what that is and respecting it, respecting their opinion, as long as it's going to fall within the boundaries of Scripture and
Right.
As long as it works. And, you know, if it isn't working, why would you keep going with a particular philosophy? Why not change the way you do things? And one of those is running on, which we're talking about right now, but feelings have been elevated to such a status that people are believing that they are, that subjective feelings are enough to make huge decisions on, to base decisions on, where I would think that feelings should be subject to my values, my priorities, and my decision-making. And even if I don't feel like it, like you just said before, I still have got to do that right thing.
That's true. I mean, it's about those agreed decisions that we're making together that aren't based on the waves of those feelings that kind of come and go, don't they?
They do.
You know, I get angry, or I'll get sad, or I'll get frustrated. You know, never make a life decision in a crisis, you know, like things like that.
Right.
Absolutely.
What do you, in terms of feelings, what role do you think they should play?
I mean, I'm a feely kind of a guy. So I have to really make sure that my feelings don't direct my entire life. Not every person is like that. But sometimes I guess I need to kind of lean into that. But sometimes I need to lean away from that and be like, whoa, you know, my feelings are really wanting me to go down this track here or try and convince my wife, Beck, about something. She's a really good stabilizer for me. She's not super feely. She's not super touchy. She's not all emotional like I am. So, you know, God really knew what he was doing when he set us up. But that's like she provides a level of strength there where sometimes I'm not super strong or and vice versa. That's the point of marriage, I guess, is to build each other up and become one. So,
My feeling is that on this area, or my belief on this area, is that action is even more powerful than feelings. And that if I'm waiting to feel like love and any of the other emotions that you're meant to feel, like for a relationship to work, then I might be disappointed. It may not come as quickly or as easily as I think. But I find that when I take the actions, even though I may be not feeling it, it's not being like you're not genuine or you're not, it's not as though you're not being authentic. So if you've had a rough period of time in your marriage, but you decide, look, rather than act out my feelings and just do the silent treatment or go away on a fishing trip or just stay out of each other's, I'm going to go and buy her some flowers and take them home and do something that just surfaces that love that is inside your heart. You know it's there somewhere. It brings it out. And you feel you actually are able to summon the feeling by doing the action. And then it also creates that reaction.
Absolutely. Yeah. If you fall out of love, just keep loving and the feelings will come back. Absolutely.
Yeah. So you see, that statement, I know some people would say, when you fall out of love, keep loving and the feelings will come back. You are thinking of love as a verb, as an action. But many people do not think of it like that. They just think it's a feeling. It's a warm-hearted feeling where you're all sort of warm towards another person. But actually, love is verb. It's doing kind things for other people.
Right.
And that's got to work. That's got to be happening in marriage or else we will get into trouble. It takes a lot of action.
Right. Absolutely. Sometimes it takes more action than you're willing to to summon. But like I think love is three things. I think love is action, it's feelings, and it's commitment. And sometimes I've got to rely on a different one to get me through the moment or the season. Sometimes I'm just working on pure commitment because I made this vow to my wife before God, my family and friends, but then I've just got to keep actioning real love towards her, and then the feelings will return. You know, there's that quote that says, "I've fallen in love many, many times, always with you." It's like, ah, that's awesome. That's right. Because you just got to keep falling in love with the same person over and over again. And when the feelings aren't really like supporting you, then just keep acting in love, choosing to love, being kind, being generous, being warm, being affectionate, being romantic. The feelings absolutely will come back because it's like you're directing yourself and feelings aren't the number one. Feelings are like they can't take first, you know, first decision-making priority.
Right. Okay, so you're a pastor. Got a lot of things to do, a lot of people demanding attention, a lot of hard to know the boundaries where the day starts and finishes, and pastoring, I know that, I've done it for a long time, spills into your home life and your home life, maybe not so much into the church life, but it's a distraction and it doesn't have to be a distraction. It can be something that you can compartmentalize and and keep it over there and over there. But inevitably, it's like outside things can get into important parts of the marriage. And I've found that scheduling certain times of the week is very helpful. Like for us, Monday has always been sacred. Very rarely do we take any appointments or do anything else other than just, you know, recover from Sunday and get ready for the week ahead, but just relax and do nothing and have no schedule, no appointment at 3 o'clock in the afternoon because you're getting up ready for that all day long. And you just got to wipe the slate clean, have a clear day, a clear head. But that's only one area of distraction. There's devices these days where people sit down at the table and don't even talk to each other, et cetera, et cetera. I know that you have addressed this issue too. Tell us what you're saying about that.
Yeah, look, it's like, I mean, that's a third of my book, really. It's how do we stay connected in this crazy life that we're involved in together? You know, you've got kids and jobs and extracurricular stuff going on, and maybe you have aging parents, and you've got, you know, every couple's got different challenges, and then you've got devices, and I don't know how many laptops and screens we've got in our house. Like every child has a laptop, and every, you know, we've got like five phones and all kinds of stuff. The amount of screens that are in my home is out of control. But I think there are five main disconnectors that we face in this kind of modern, postmodern, post-postmodern era, like distraction, busyness, tiredness, poor priorities, and not enough time together. I just think that straight away, there's just five massive things that we can work on. Like if I just
say them again. Say them again.
Just distraction. Okay. So we're super distracted. We live in a world where, you know, most people are talking over the top of their phone, right? You know, like I'm on my phone, I'm on Instagram, but then I'm also trying to have a conversation with someone. Like that's terrible. Put your phone in a drawer when you get home from work. And forget about it for a while. Like disconnect from the world so you can connect with your family. Like put distraction aside. Secondly is busyness, right? We overcommit. Maybe not since we've just come out of lockdowns. Maybe we're undercommitted at the moment. Good. Maybe that's a good thing. Let's not overcommit our lives and let busyness run. Busyness has been glorified by the world, and we've got to remove that badge of honor and think, well, no, this is distracting me from the main thing that I'm doing, my family and building the church, right? Three is tiredness. Like, just take a good Sabbath, you know? Get a good night's rest, you know? Like make sure that you're not tired for your family, for your spouse, week after week. Thirdly is priorities. A lot of couples just don't prioritize each other very well. You know, like maybe the kids have taken first priority or work has taken first priority. And under God, your spouse needs to be your first priority for your time.
So what's that
for
mean?
Your energy.
Yeah. Like when you say time, energy, okay. So does that mean if my spouse is my priority, how do I express that?
I think it's focus and attention.
Right. Would you call it listening?
Absolutely. I think one of the best things I ever learned was how to listen longer than I'm comfortable with. Like, a guy's just got to learn to listen. It won't kill you to stay on the couch another half an hour, really. You know, like, just listen longer than you feel like. The best thing I can say to Beck is tell me more, right? Keep going. Talk to me. Then what happened? How do you feel about that? What else is going on in your life? Like, listen. Listen really, really well, and your spouse is going to feel love. That's just how it works, right? So, yeah, priorities. Like, listening, focus time and attention to your spouse without distractions. Like, leave your laptop in the other room. Like, get some wine and some cheese after the kids have gone to bed and just sit on the lounge and give them undivided focus. Prioritize.
No TV?
Look, TV is a great thing. Netflix, Stan, whatever you're using at the moment. That's a great thing for relaxing together. That's cool, but it's not connecting. Like, let's not put it, oh, yeah, we spend all this time together. No. Like, we're living in a world these days where quantity time can be very, very poor quality. Because we think that if I'm watching a screen together, like sometimes there's two screens going on at once, you know, like we're watching Netflix and I'm on Instagram and I'm lying in bed next to my wife. That's not connecting. That's not a date night, right? Like that's terrible. That's not contributing. Yes, it's relaxing. Yeah, it might help you de-stress, but that's not contributing to your marriage.
Right.
And then number five was just not enough time together. So, yeah, same.
Yeah. Yeah. It's I think some people think that life comes ready-made and that marriages come ready-made. A house doesn't build itself and a garden doesn't grow itself without being cultivated and looked after. And a marriage doesn't just happen. It takes work. And honestly, I think it's possibly maybe the hardest work you're going to do in your entire life.
Absolutely.
And so you can't afford to be lazy in your marriage. It's like you're not going to be able to do some of the things you want to do, a lot of the things you want to do. And you can't afford to be a little boy in a man's body.
Ooh, now you're preaching.
Well, you got to accept responsibilities and
something. Absolutely.
For me, it was a little easier because, well, not easier, but I came from a terrible home. Darren, I mean, a lot of arguing, yelling, shouting. It was very aggressive, and the atmosphere was always electric with negativity. It was just didn't feel good. I didn't enjoy it. So I left when I was 16.
Wow.
But that actually made me, because then I had to get work, I had to earn money, I had to, and so I developed my own business and went to university. And then I came to Christ when I was 19, and I think he helps you definitely accept the whole process of growing up and to put away the childish things and to say, okay, well, and I got married like 4 weeks after I was born again. So I was 19 when I got married. Chris was 18. Mm. We had our first child 2 years later, about 18 months to 2 years later. And then we bought a house. So once you have children, a mortgage, and a marriage, you can't afford to be a little boy anymore. you gotta say, okay,
that's right.
Man up. We're gonna leave that lifestyle of just surfing my life away and out with the boys. That's all over. And now I am giving myself to make this marriage work. I'm giving myself to this girl.
Right. That's such an act of maturity, though, isn't it? Just to go, I'm taking responsibility for my family, for my wife, you know, my relationship with my wife. Yeah, I mean, we currently lead, my wife and I, just a young marriage group. There's 8 young married couples, no kids. And on Tuesday night, I said to the guys, you know, if you're going to act like a boy, expect your wife to be acting like your mother. So if you don't grow up and take responsibility for yourself, your spirituality, your finances, your relationship with your wife, then expect her to act like your mother. But if you grow up then and, you know, treat her like a queen and you live like a, you know, you behave like a man, like a king almost, then she's going to treat you like you're her husband, not like you're her son.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. And the acceptance of responsibility is the basis for authority. You can't have authority unless you've assumed responsibility.
Right.
And I think that that's a basis for selection of leadership in my world, appointing pastors and leaders. I got to know that they accept responsibility. And that goes all the way into when things go wrong, that I accept responsibility.
Right.
So if things go wrong in the church, I don't say, oh, it's their fault, it's that guy's fault. I might not have had anything to do with it, but I say it's on me. I need to see what I didn't do or could have done to have done this better. And I'll say that to the team. And then everybody feels more comfortable about saying, okay, well, this is where I dropped the ball and, you know, I needed to. And I think in marriage, it's so important. That's one of the areas of being an adult, being a grown-up person, being able to say, look, babe, I'm sorry, I blew it here. I should have done better. And so I think the ability to repair the breaches when they happen, rather than have a simmering bitterness and a simmering grudge and fantasizing about marrying somebody else and you know, your spouse going away or leaving or whatever, I think all those negative fantasies and imaginations start to get inside a person. And we live in a world where people are thinking that all the time. I mean, I know of too many marriages that have broken up, and the guy is thinking, I've got to find a better girl. That's not the issue. The guy has to become a better man.
Absolutely.
And you're only, if you don't deal with that stuff, you're going to take it into the next relationship and it'll blow up.
Yeah.
You got to deal with it and accept that, you know, this is your situation, and you can go to work on it or just walk away and live with all the regrets and loss and consequences that come with that.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I think that's one of the hardest things is to deal with your own selfishness, right? We have friends and they were getting asked, they were married, getting asked a lot of times, oh, when are you going to have kids? When are you going to have kids? When are you going to have kids? For years. And eventually she just started saying, oh, we can't. We're too selfish. It was like, oh, right. But that's the hardest thing to deal with in your own marriage is the desire for me to put me first when I need to keep putting my spouse before me. That's an ongoing decision of maturing, you know, and it's a difficult journey, but it's a worthwhile journey, but very difficult.
Yeah. So in the next, we've got about another 5 minutes or so, 5-10 minutes, and I could talk on, you know, I feel like this is such a raw area, and I imagine that some people listening have not found it comfortable or easy, some issues that we've raised, some points that we've said. And congratulations for continuing to listen. If you still are listening, that's great. Check out Darren's book, The Happy Marriage, and they can follow you on Instagram.
Yep.
At
Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, really.
Yeah, just search for Darren Chapman, and you're going to find him. What's your Instagram handle?
You can find me at D Chapman or at The Happy Marriage AU for Australia.
Yep. Okay. So I'd like to try and cover two more things that to try and help people with recovery. If there's somebody out there right now listening to this and they're thinking, oh, this is hard to hear, and your marriage is in trouble, from my point of view, the ability to repair and adjust is what Jesus was referring to when he said, I want you to be perfect. That doesn't mean flawless and without a mistake in your life. It means when you do make a mistake, you have the capacity to actually repair. And the way that a breach in a relationship repairs is through one party saying, I'm sorry, and the other saying, I forgive you. And a relationship is all the more richer for that. It just takes swallowing pride and a little bit of humility. Well, the other way is adjusting, not being so rigid and saying, yes, I've got to buy the boat. Maybe you don't. Right. I have got to have those curtains in our bedroom, you know, or we're going to name the child Horace. No, we're going to name him Bruce. It's like, just relax. It's not the end of the world. And be adjustable, be a little more flexible. Mm,
that's great.
And Jesus said, that's a perfect person. I mean, so when she says, I want to go shopping and you want to go somewhere else, make it so that you can do both together. And, you know, it's that ability to be a little more flexible, I think, helps in a marriage. What are your keys for repairing a breach?
Definitely owning your side of that breach. You need to own it. You need to recognize it for what it is. And like what you said, Pastor Phil, like together, that's the key. We want to be able to do this life together. So whatever is, you know, attacking, destroying, breaching that level of oneness, that level of togetherness, that's what we need to look at. And often it's not just one person's fault. Often it's actually, well, we're both a party to this in some way. And so we need to look at the problem together and how do we fix that? But then each person needs to take ownership, acknowledge it, communicate together, forgive and let go. Like forgiveness is powerful in marriage. Like if you can walk through that journey of true, deep forgiveness, you will find intimacy is restored. That's the power of forgiveness. It restores your friendship. It restores your intimacy. It restores your connection. And then you've got to move on. Like, you've got to stop bringing it up every time there's an opportunity. You know, keep moving forwards with your spouse. You know, when there's a breach in a decision that was made without you, like, then, yeah, totally. Like, I made a decision the other week without Beck. I said, oh, this is what I'm going to do on Saturday night. And she's like, oh, is it? Okay. When were you going to let me know about that? And I was like, oh, totally didn't tell you, did I? No. Didn't ask you, did I? No. I was like, and that kind of goes against the agreement that we have about communicating and sharing our lives together. So I should have just texted her during the day, hey, thinking about going to the movies on Saturday night. Does that work for you? Like, and then she would have been like, absolutely. Then we're doing life together. We're on the same page about it. But
exactly.
But I didn't do it. I just went, hey, this is what I'm doing. I didn't include her in this calendar planning thing that I was doing with somebody else. And there's a little breach there. But she brought it up immediately. We repaired immediately. Yes, it was awkward. Yes, it was uncomfortable. I felt like, ugh, this is horrible. But in 5 minutes, we'd sorted it out. We spent a great night together because she said, ouch, quickly. And I took I owned it. And then she forgave me. And then there we go. Restoration, intimacy can keep flowing.
Yeah, there's always some rough waters to go through. And a lot of people want to avoid that altogether so they won't tell their kids off or won't try and bring up a difficult discussion. Because, let's just all sweep it under the carpet. But it's got to be faced. Stuff's got to come into the light. And then you can deal with it if it only develops maturity. The second thing... go ahead. No, go
I was
ahead.
Just going to say, if you're not prepared to rock the boat, you've got to realise that by not communicating it, the boat is already being rocked by your disconnection, by your unwillingness to open up. Right. So the marriage is already affected. You may as well talk about it and resolve the issue rather than staying silent.
Right. Exactly. And I always think you should get to it before it gets to you.
Wow. Right.
So while you've still got a calm mind and you're not in a state of rage or anything and going to say things you regret. And I generally say something like, help me understand this. Am I seeing this right? Before I get too screwed up, you know, any of those sorts of phrases. Yes. Like, before I get really messed up over this, am I right in understanding that, like, you spent this on the, you know, am I right? I'm just trying to get it. And then, you know, you find out yeah, it was completely justified. And you're so thankful that you didn't come in raging, saying, hey, absolutely, what's this? I see you. You know, you realize that it was absolutely a necessary annual subscription that had to be paid for the dog insurance or something. And
Or whatever.
It's just like, don't assume that you know, and let your rage dictate your logic.
Yes.
You need to give the benefit of the doubt. Yeah, that's and right. Say, look, maybe I've got this wrong.
We have a code phrase that we use. So if we want to talk about something that's important, we would say to each other, and Beck came up with this years ago, she just would say, hey, in the interest of open communication, and that's our code phrase, and that means she's going to share something. She's being right. vulnerable in sharing right. something, and I probably need to brace myself.
Yes.
Here comes something that we're about to talk about. Oh, okay. Yeah, right. Great.
Okay.
I mean, pick your timing well, but like that's how to start it kind, I reckon. Start it with some generosity and some kindness. Give the other person the benefit of the doubt.
It is, Darren, I just can't tell you how important it is for couples to have these conversations, because if you don't, you'll have them with somebody else. And that's criticizing and backbiting your spouse, it's murder. You're going to murder them. You're murdering the marriage. And you can't go to your mother-in-law or your friends and say, oh, he's such an idiot. He's so lazy. He's never going to. And you can't, guys, go to your friends and say, oh, the old trouble and strife. Yeah, she's really giving me a rough time. Oh, she's a hopeless thing. She, you know, her cooking stinks, you know. You can't do that. You got to go away and say, my wife is she's one in a million. And stick up for your husband's wives. Say he's incredible. He's honor for each other with other people, because it's par for the course for most people. They get amongst their friends and they just criticize their spouses or complain about them. And just be different. Be holy. Be not typical.
Yep. Be atypical. That's right. Honor your spouse. That's right.
Yeah.
And then have the hard conversations with them, because then you get to grow together. Then you get to change together. Then you get to grow up, right? Otherwise, it's just like all of this with everybody else. It's like,
you haven't got a chance.
You're not actually fixing anything. You're not actually growing up with your spouse. Right.
No.
That's good.
That's right. Okay, so the last thing that I wanted to try and cover here was, there are couples, obviously, who have fallen apart, and you might be listening right now and you're thinking, well, you know, I've had a disaster and I've been through it, and I grieve for people who have faced these situations, and I'm praying and hoping that they learn what their part and how they could change in the process. But certainly I am not in a attitude of judgment or condemnation of anybody who's been through these difficult and very challenging marriage breakups and family breakdowns, etc. And there could be any number of reasons, and I'm not prepared to point the finger at anybody on that issue. But I do think that people need to be healed of whatever pain they have experienced through the breakup. And then I think they also need to be healed of whatever areas of their life were causing their part of causing the problem. It's one thing, the other might have been doing all sorts of crazy things as well. But we can't change that, but we can change ourselves. And I really think it's important for us to move on, like you said before, Darren, to actually move beyond the hurt and the pain. And how do you think people can do that effectively?
Like, let me just clarify. Are you talking about they've been through a separation or a divorce?
Yes, a divorce.
They're on the other side. Right. Look, we have seen a little bit of that and journeyed with a few people across the other side of that. But not a lot. There has been some people who we've journeyed through from, you know, one side of that coin. So it's a difficult journey. You know, there's been a breaking of covenant, and when there's a breaking of covenant, there's a lot of pain. There's a lot of heartache. You know, you would feel attacked, and like there's a lot of shame that would come with that. So you're dealing with things on a number of fronts, and I would just say, stay connected to the house of God. Stay connected to healthy people. Receive prayer as often as you can. Just make sure your relationship with God is your first priority, and then you'll know the power of healing. You'll know the power of what the Father can do with, you know, with a broken person, a broken child, a broken vessel. You know, that's, I guess that would be my highest recommendation.
It's interesting because, I mean, the divorce rate in church life is pretty high. It's kind of equal, the same as people not in church. And so just going to church isn't going to ensure stable marriage. I mean, it's not a magic trick. Going to church, whoop, my family's going to be just fine. I've actually got to, as you say, be activating the principles of working through all these difficulties and challenges. And being a Christian doesn't mean you're going to have less problems. Probably means you're going to have more. And the need for application to actually apply myself to the things that are super important, like the marriage and the family, is so important to do. And I can't say that I feel that I have been able to do that all my life. You know, I wish if you had your time again, you'd think, I'd do that a little differently. Right. But happily, God has been good. He's a redeemer. My wife is wonderful and forgiving and you know, and I hope I'm able to be a little bit of that toward her as well. Mm-hmm. And we just keep on walking through the dark valleys, and you eventually come out into the morning.
Right. I would also add, like, professional counselling is super valuable, very helpful.
Right.
You know, when you've walked through a really dark time in your life, obviously if it's a Christian counsellor or a Christian psychologist, that's a lot better. But, you know, doing that deeper journey with someone who's trained in a professional way is extremely helpful. So
And read the book, The Happy Marriage, obviously.
And the Bible. Not in that order.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Well, Darren, it's been a delight talking with you. And I know that we would have touched on a lot of areas that would both help people and maybe, you know, bring some guidance. And it makes me think that maybe we should do more of these podcasts because I know so many people are struggling in these areas and try to just avoid addressing them. And I know through the pandemic, because couples were just locked together in the house,
that
there's quite a few problems that increased. And hopefully this little podcast will bring some hope. And I do pray that people will come to church and meet with Jesus and really open their heart to God. And so, Darren, why don't you pray for people listening right now, and then we'll close.
Love to. Absolutely. God, just thank you so much for the gift of marriage and everything that it can be. And God, I pray for anyone listening who is struggling in an area, feel like they are unable to communicate, unable to get on the same page, unable to even connect well with their spouse, God. And we want to pray just your moving, your strengthening for courage and grace to flow. We want to pray that there'd be such an ability to forgive, to move forwards, to get on the same page, to be vulnerable, to be open and honest. We just pray for good marriages, healthy marriages, marriages that are strong and well connected, that prioritize one another. We want to pray for every couple listening that you would bring blessing and life, that you would bring solutions and peace, God. And we just thank you for the incredible journey that we get to do with our spouse in oneness with them and in oneness with you, God, and just bring life and peace in your mighty name, Jesus. Amen.
Amen. Well, thanks everybody for jumping on this week with us. Look forward to talking with you next week. Thanks, Darren. It's been a pleasure talking with you.
Thank you, Pastor Phil.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the C3 Church Global Podcast. Let us know what you thought by leaving a review and connect with us on Instagram at C3 Church Global. We hope you'll be back real soon.